From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our connections with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
Today's show is about producing electricity and what to do with your electronic waste. The Shepherd of the Mountains Lutheran Church recently launched a 12-kilowatt rooftop solar system using, in part, a $35,000 grant from Rocky Mountain Power.
On a sunny day last week, they were able to generate almost 66 kilowatts of electricity. Tim Fair was the manager of this project, and he joins us along with Chris Lucas, the principal partner and manager at Synergy Power, and Jeff Hymas, senior communications specialist with Rocky Mountain Power, to talk about how and why they decided to go solar. Perhaps it has to do with being good shepherds of the environment.
How nice. That's in the first half of the show. Then in the second half, we'll speak with Scott Kay. He's an executive with MetTech Recycling in Salt Lake City. When you bring your electronic waste like laptops, hard drives, fax machines, and TVs to Recycle Utah, they in turn deliver it to MetTech, where they disassemble the product.
It's done in a secure and environmentally safe manner and not shipped overseas to recycling towns in China and India. Scott joins us to explain more about how it's done and what they do with all the disassembled components.
You'll hear all that and some news about the XL pipeline already pumping oil.
Yeah.
You'll hear about the EPA's new tailpipe emissions and Governor Gary Herbert's take on that. And you'll also hear about the Pebble Mine.
Right. Of course, you can join in on today's discussion by posting your questions or comments to our Facebook page, KPCW This Green Earth, or email us at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
The environment, our connections with it, and our impacts upon it. It's This Green Earth, and it all gets started right after a few words from our underwriters. Stay tuned.
Elvin Bishop brings the blues, roots, rock and roll he's been known for over the last 40 years to the Egyptian Theater. After sold-out shows in 2013, he'll be back for three nights, Thursday through Saturday, March 6th to the 8th. A veteran guitarist who fused the blues with gospel, R&B, and country traditions, Bishop has collaborated with everyone from Jimi Hendrix to John Lee Hooker, the Allman Brothers to B.B. King. Tickets start at $39 and are available at parkcityshows.com or the box office at 328 Main Street. The Egyptian Theater is a nonprofit organization.
This is Tom Roney with Prudential Utah Real Estate, and we're happy to support KPCW. Prudential Utah has been helping locals and visitors with their real estate needs since 1976. Our agents know the community and the local market. More information can be found online at prud-utah.com or at one of our 14 offices throughout Park City.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and topics and news. Ministers of Information here, Chris Cherniak and Nell Larson.
Our new title of the day.
Ministers of Environmental Information, yes.
I'll take it.
That's it. Yeah, we're here to talk first about solar power. And the Shepherd of the Mountains Lutheran Church recently installed around 50 panels on their roof to generate electricity. And here to talk about that, why they did it, and how they got it done is Tim Fair. He was the solar project manager with the church, and he'll tell us all about what that means and what he did for that. And Chris Lucas, he is the principal partner and proposal manager with Synergy Power, the company that installed the panels. We hope to have Jeff Hymas. He's a communications specialist with Rocky Mountain Power. Join us. He's scheduled, but he's not here as yet.
He's a This Green Earth regular, though, so
yes.
He'll show up soon.
He knows where the show is.
He knows where the studio is.
Yeah. But we got plenty to talk about with Chris and Tim. So first of all, we want to thank both of you taking the time to come in and chat with us this morning.
Thank you.
Well, let's start with you, Tim. Why did the church want to do something like this? You know, what were the reasons there?
Well, one of the primary things that people need to understand is that the church has a mission, and part of its mission is to be good stewards of our environment. And as a part of doing that, we were looking at expanding the church to do a better job of providing our educational services, particularly for the community, because we do have a lot of community involvement within the church. We were looking to expand, and in the process of expanding, we wanted to do some things to really address some of our impact on the environment and see what we could do there. So that was kind of the impetus for it. As we got into looking at it, one of the things we really wanted to do was to go to clean energy and be able to see what we could do from a renewable energy or solar project on our expansion. My background, I've been a consulting engineer, and have done a lot of different things working for companies around Utah and the rest of the United States. Mm. I was asked to join Summit County Solar when they were putting together their plans for what they were going to do for all of Summit County. The emphasis in that, however, was primarily on residential installations, and I really was interested in getting an installation at a not-for-profit or a more of a business-type enterprise. And so we started working in that one. As part of that activity, we are involved in interfaith activity. There are several other churches which are also trying to mm-hmm. be good stewards at this time. And we, in that process, met up with Synergy Power PV, and Synergy Power was working with the interfaith groups and said, hey, we can work together and see whether we can't get a grant to help us with that installation.
Okay, so let's talk about the grant process. How did you start? Give us a thumbnail sketch of what that involved.
Well, the first part of it is to try and scope basically how large of an operation we have and okay. what we could do and what our real need was in terms of how much power do we consume and what could we do in the expansion in terms of installing solar to kind of work at reducing some of that and conserving money that we could apply to other parts of our mission within the church as we do our activity. Chris and I got together and started talking about what it would take to what it takes to apply for a grant from Rocky Mountain Power's Blue Sky program. Mm-hmm. We looked at it and said, hey, we've got a good shot at doing this. Let's see what we can do. And so we kind of scratched out a few days of effort and kind of jointly generated a good grant okay. application.
Good.
So, Chris, tell us a little bit about what you do and your company before we talk about the rest of this process.
Well, Synergy Power, we do all sorts of different solar installations. We do residential. We do commercial. We have been getting involved deeper and deeper with the Blue Sky program.
Okay.
Because it is just such a win-win for nonprofits. It is a way for them to reduce their monthly operating costs, which means instead of writing a check for the light bill, now they write checks for supporting their causes, the people that they help. It is the most win-win situation in the country. And so when I was spending a lot of time in Park City that winter, I was looking at many of the local churches because it had been beginning with Blue Sky. So actually up to last year, only four churches had received Blue Sky funding since the program began. Last year, 10.
Wow.
Yeah, it was church year.
It was, yeah.
And so it's just, the process basically is just getting people to decide if they want to do it because the Blue Sky grant, it's like the lottery. You can't run if you don't buy a ticket. So if you want to try it, then put together the grant application. And as Tim said, it's about looking at the power usage that they already have, which in this case was going to be kind of different because they were doing two additions on the building. So whatever power they had been using was going to be completely different. So we sort of tried to guess where this would go in the future and with these additions up, where the power bills would be. And then there's only so much roof.
Yeah.
So if we tried to come up with a workable compromise that would take everything into account, and then somehow give them great benefit on the power bill And that's what we base the proposal on.
Fantastic. So how long has Synergy been working in solar panels?
As far as doing solar systems?
Yeah.
I mean, we just use solar panels. We don't make them.
Right.
In a couple different forms, we've been around about 7 years.
Okay. Great.
All right. So Tim and Chris, you get together and you kind of sketch out a design. You figure out how much room is there on the roof. How much capacity can you put out on the roof? And what did you come up with?
Well, we came up with the ability to put about 12.75 kilowatts of solar generating capacity on one phase of the roof.
Okay. So one phase
of the roof. That would then allow us on the next one to do another 8 to 9 kilowatt capability system up there for generating. So we went in for only the phase one portion of it.
Phase one, and you said that it would cost roughly...
We thought that the cost of it was going to be roughly just under $50,000.
Okay, so Rocky Mountain Power reviews that application and determines that we'll give you, instead of 50, we'll give you what?
They decided that they would give us $35,000.
So it's kind of like...
And the reason for that was that they had so many applications.
Yes.
And they felt so many of them were worthy. They said, what can we really do to reward the people who really want to do something but be able to reward a few more?
Okay. So
they told us, hey, we think it's going to be about 8.3 to 8.5 kilowatt system for $35,000 is what we can afford.
And actually, you ended up with something more than that.
Well, we went back and we scratched our heads because we said, hey, we really were aiming for the 12 kilowatt kind of number. But we said, well, what can we find? How close can we get if we were to use a little less efficient solar panel and maybe not as aesthetically pleasing mounting structure and everything for that? What can we do that's going to be a reasonable looking installation but generate a lot more power? And we came up with 11.75, so we got very close to the 12 kilowatt we were looking for.
Okay, and so for $35,000 you were able to install a 50 panel 12.75 kilowatt system.
Yes.
Okay, so your capital costs were so basically Rocky Mountain Power paid for your capital cost.
Yes, this is a really very generous grant from Rocky Mountain Power, and they really do a good job of covering all of the cost of the installation, with the exception of your own building provisions and things that you would have to do there. So,
okay.
Like the roof of the building, that's all ours. But in reality, all of the power aspect of it was put in there, and that included some monitoring information and things so that we can continue our educational mission within the church. And every visitor to the church gets to see how well is that solar system working up there. What's it doing for me?
Whether they like it or not.
Yes.
Well, joining us by phone is Jeff Hymas. He's a senior communications specialist with Rocky Mountain Power. Jeff, are you there?
I'm there. Good morning. I apologize for not being in the studio. I had some issues getting there.
That's all right. You're Chris Lucas and Tim Fair are here, and of course Nell and myself. So thanks for taking the time to chat about. And we were talking about the design and the application process, and the fact that they were granted $35,000 to install this what ended up being a 12 or almost 13 kilowatt. Our system. Jeff, we were talking about the application process. How many applicants do you get over a period of a year or whenever the application candidate process is open to applications? How many do you receive?
Well, it varies from year to year, and the amount of Blue Sky funding that we have available to award for community-based projects like this also varies year to year, but it's quite a few. We get a lot in this year. As was mentioned, there were 22 total projects awarded funding from our 2013 cycle, and 10 of those were churches or synagogues. So it was, you know, kind of the year of the house of worship to get solar panels. But there were a lot of other organizations that applied, and we had a variety here in Park City. The U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association was another recipient of funding for solar panels. It's a very popular program, and it's made possible by our participating Blue Sky customers.
So tell us a little bit more about why Rocky Mountain Power has decided to run this granting program, and what is it that, you know, what's the motivation behind it?
Well, our Blue Sky program has been around for more than a decade, and what it is, it's a way for our customers to support renewable energy development in the western United States. And so beginning in 2000, people could pay a little bit more on the power bill to support renewable energy at utility-scale projects in the West. But then beginning in 2006, we implemented these community-based project funds where a portion of that money was then awarded to community-based organizations, solar panels or small wind turbines or whatever else, renewable generation. And so since 2006, there have been more than 100 projects in Utah to be awarded funding. And it's been a great thing because it helps Blue Sky customers and everyone here in Utah be able to learn more about solar energy or wind energy and be able to see it. It's more visible. It's hands-on.
Okay, so let's go back to Tim. Now that the system is up and running, on a sunny day, like we had a couple of sunny days last
yes.
week or so, what are you actually generating?
What we're seeing in February months is that on a nice sunny day, we're actually, peak power-wise, we're right at 10 kilowatts that we're getting out of the system and very close to what the max capability would be. We'll hit that max as we get a little more towards July and mm-hmm. August time frame. Sun angle's a little bit better for that sort of thing, and there's a little less atmospheric filtering that goes into this whole process. But for about 2 weeks in total in February that we had the system up and operating pretty well, including some pretty snowy, rainy days, we ended up generating over 600 kilowatt hours of power towards meeting our needs. And I'm estimating that what we actually used during that period of time was a little more than twice that amount, but that's a big contribution to our meeting our costs of operating our facility, and that saves
right.
a bunch of money that we can apply to other parts of our mission.
Do you anticipate that during the sunny summer months you'll meet your entire electricity need?
We could get very close to doing that because one of the big uses that we have is, of course, the forced air heat.
Mm-hmm.
And a nice thing about Park City is that we have natural air conditioning here. So we're not
so far
running the furnaces as much during that period of time. Right now, the furnaces are pretty busy. You know, we have a lot of sensitive electrical equipment and pianos and things like that, so the church stays kind of toasty warm, but
right.
that's not inexpensive.
Right.
We'll get very close to doing that. So the way the agreement works with Rocky Mountain Power, this is a net metering agreement. And basically what we're doing is we are offsetting what our use is, but it's over the total year so that we'll help a bunch during the summer to make up for the shortfall in the winter.
Right. So you get a credit for it.
Yes.
Spread out over the course of the year. You're not actually receiving checks from Rocky Mountain Power.
No, we wouldn't put in enough power capability
right.
to actually get to that point
but,
in time.
But
that's really not the purpose. The purpose is to be better stewards of what we're doing and generate clean energy for most of our needs.
You're burning less coal and less natural gas. Isn't that right, Jeff?
Yeah, by using a renewable energy to offset the need for electricity from other sources, and we do a lot to support renewable energy. And we have in addition to Blue Sky, our Utah Solar Incentive Program that is awarding $50 million over 5 years to participating or to customers who are selected through a lottery process. And then I think you already know we've talked about this before, but Rocky Mountain Power is one of the leading utility owners of wind power in the country. And we have some other exciting things happening. We're working to really expand the renewable energy choices available for our customers, and hopefully in the coming months we'll be able to talk some more about those things. But it's exciting, and we're glad to be a part of it.
So I have to ask, though, what is the value. Why does Rocky Mountain Power want to encourage churches and organizations or schools or other individuals to put solar panels on their roof when, in effect, that turns those systems or people or units into electron generators. That's electrons you're not selling. So from a business point of view, can you help me understand why you want to support that?
Right. And it's true, there are actually issues with, you know, net metering. And we're working hard to make sure that while we're providing ways for our customers to be able to meet their own renewable energy goals, that also the prices involved and the policies are fair for all of our customers. And really, this is driven by our customers' desire mm-hmm. to go green. A lot of people are wanting to put solar panels on their roofs as the prices have come down quite a bit. And over the years, we're just seeing that demand grow. And so, this is a way for us just to be able to do what we can to help support our customers and their electricity needs and their desires to have more renewable energy be part of that. Because, you know, even though we're adding more renewables to our mix, they've been doing that for several years, a lot of people would like to see even more of that. This just provides a way for them to get there faster.
Okay. Does it reduce the demand and load on your existing power plants, substations, transmission lines, et cetera, and increase their lifespan? Is that one reason why?
Well, it's kind of a double-edged sword because, you know, while it can help to offset some of the electricity, overall electricity used from other sources, as more and more people install solar, there are issues we have to deal with about the fixed cost of providing power, the lines, the poles, the meters, those things that still have to be paid for regardless of how much electricity customers are using.
Right.
And there are issues about those costs being spread over smaller numbers of customers. And so it's something we're trying to work through while still supporting customers' desire to have renewables, just making sure that those costs are fair for everyone.
Right.
Right. So, you know, we have a couple more minutes left. And, Tim, I want you to point out that these solar panels and your project are visible, very visible here in town.
Yes, actually, if you're on 224, which is our main connection to Kimball Junction, when you get to the junction where you would take off to go to Canyons, if you're headed northbound, you can't miss the panels on the church rooftop as you look across the waterfall that Canyons has right at that intersection. And heading the opposite direction or on Canyons, very visible from that area. You can see it, and it's really nice because there are nice blue panels up there. So
yeah.
We've got blue sky on the roof and blue sky in the in the building, and we're trying to do more to protect blue sky.
And
fantastic.
And one thing is they get covered with snow. Does that affect performance? Are you up there having to shovel the snow off?
No, it's pretty nice because the panels are very much self-cleaning and self-maintaining. The operation and maintenance costs associated with a solar installation are really low, just almost zero. If you really look at it, this is an installation that should be in there. As long as we don't send somebody up on a roof for some strange reason,
right.
We should do okay. And the panels are very, very sturdy. When there's snow on them, it's actually self-cleaning because the panel itself reflects enough of the heat and light. And then, of course, the generating process produces a little more heat. Works better than the heat tape on my house at home.
And, Chris, what's the expected lifespan of these panels?
Well, the panels actually could go on forever.
Okay.
They come with a 25-year warranty to operate at minimum performance levels. And then the inverters, which actually change the output from direct current from DC that the panels generate into AC, which the building runs on, most of those will have 10-year warranties. So it's fairly safe.
Yeah.
For the owner to really not have that worry.
Okay.
A durable, long-lasting system.
Exactly. Which is actually very good looking.
Yeah, I'm going to say that some of the panels we put on a vehicle we called the Lunar Rover and another vehicle we called the Lunar Orbiter after over 50 years ago, they're still producing. They're pretty good. So
right.
It's good life, and they're in a harsher environment than we are here because they've got solar flares and things to deal with in space.
Exactly. So we don't have that to deal with yet.
Yet.
That's what we like to say here.
As long as we keep doing our stewardship, maybe we won't have.
Exactly. That's a good way to end it. Tim Fair, he's the Solar Project Manager for the Shepherd of the Mountains Lutheran Church. Well, thank you for taking the time to come in. And same, Chris Lucas, Principal Partner and Proposal Manager with Synergy Power. And Jeff Hymas, Senior Communications Specialist with Rocky Mountain Power. I want to thank you all for coming in and taking the time to chat with us about this system and others. And we'll stay in touch because you have more plans going forward, and we'll learn about those. And same with Chris, with what you guys are doing. And Jeff, you have, like you said, you have some plans coming up, and we'll be in touch about that too. So thank you all for taking the time.
Thanks for having us on.
You.
All right.
Thank you.
Let's take a break for some underwriters. And when we come back, we'll be talking about electronic e-waste, how that gets recycled, and where it ends up. It's This Green Earth. Stay tuned.
Duke Crew Dog Waste Removal is proud to support KPCW. Since 2002, Duke Crew has been picking up where your dogs leave off. More poop scooping information at dukecrew.biz or 659-1241. Is dog poop a pain in your grass? Duke Crew to the rescue.
Hi, this is Alyssa Daly with Republic Services, your local recycling and garbage pickup provider and proud sponsor of KPCW's This Green Earth. All-in-one recycling is used in Summit County. Recyclables go in your larger blue or brown bin, and gray is for garbage. Recycling helps keep Summit County clean. SummitCountyRecycles.org.
I'm John Wells. Join us for Cool Science Radio Thursday at 9 a.m.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak. How is climate change impacting penguins? We'll talk with P.D. Boersma, who's just returned from a study in Antarctica.
Then Michael Water of Texas A&M about the 12,600-year-old remains of a small boy found recently in Montana that confirms truths about what scientists previously theorized.
That's Thursday at 9 a.m. on Cool Science Radio, brought to you by Peak Art and Frame.
Welcome back to This Green Earth weekly talk show about environmental issues, topics, concerns, concepts of sustainability. She's Nell Larson. I'm Chris Jerniak. And joining us in the studio is Scott Kay. He's an account executive with MetTech Recycling down in Salt Lake City. They have an operation. They have operations elsewhere. And we're here to talk about just what MetTech Recycling does with respect to electronic waste. So, Scott, thanks for taking the time to join us this morning.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
So in our intro, we talk about Recycle Utah, who does an amazing work up here in Park City in recycling virtually everything. There's very few things they don't recycle, but one thing they do take is e-waste. And that's a little complicated in its handling and its processes. It's got a lot of components. It has a lot of potential metals and other chemicals associated. So you have a very niche market in handling that. Why don't you first tell us, what is e-waste? What is it that you will accept, and maybe what is it you don't accept?
Typically, e-waste is anything that's electronics. We will accept most any type of electronics that plug in or require a battery. The items that we cannot accept are items that have hazardous materials in them or compressed gases. So we can't take refrigerators because of the Freon, any type of compressed gases, oils, those type of materials that we can't take. We also can't take any biohazards from medical equipment unless they've been properly cleaned.
Okay.
So give us a little bit of a profile of your business, how long you've been around, and how you got into this area of work.
Well, MedTech itself has been around for about 40 years nationwide. We have five total facilities, Massachusetts, North Carolina, Denver, Salt Lake, and Gilroy, California. And what we've done and where most of our material comes from is from businesses, but we also partner with a lot of the nonprofits and the municipals in picking up consumer waste as well. And how I've gotten into that is my background has always been mainly in manufacturing, and part of my manufacturing background has been to completely use all the available resources I can, and anything that's spun off, we find a way to reuse it. So that background has allowed me to step into this role as well and find a use for electronics that are continually being updated. By the time you buy a computer or a phone or a laptop,
right,
by the time you get it, it's obsolete and the next wave's coming out. And as a society, we're turning those over three or four times a year.
Have you seen the rates of electronic recycling increase? Are you seeing, you know, a lot more come into your facilities?
We are seeing an awful lot of that. And as far as the rates go, some commodities just are costing more and more, particularly CRT glass. CRT glass is heavily contains lead. 45% of the weight of an old CRT glass monitor or TV, 45% of that weight is lead.
Wow.
And the ability to take that lead is, we want to keep it out of the landfills, and once they get broken, that lead can enter into the ground. And that is one of the primary things. The cost to recycle that is horrendous, and there's only so many companies really in the world that can process that. The cost for us is we are one of the very few who have an actual disassembly center in Utah. Each one of our facilities, the electronics we take in, very labor intensive. We will disassemble the electronics, so we will separate the boards, the plastics, the hard drives, the metals, and then we sort them into what we call pure commodity streams, and then we have certified downstream partners that we audit regularly. And then they process that, recycle it, and those materials enter in as new raw materials. So we're not using more Earth's resources,
right,
with virgin raw materials.
Right.
So give us an idea of what this facility looks like. I'm curious, you know, is it a big warehouse? Is it a relatively small facility with a few people taking this stuff apart?
Salt Lake is the smallest plant out of the five chains. We have a 70,000 square foot facility down in Salt Lake. And basically, we are a large warehouse. At the front of the place, we have four loading doors. We unload the materials, we sort it, we store it, and then we have a line that we process at. So we have several technicians that will just disassemble that electronics.
So hard drives go to one line, and cathode ray tubes or so, TVs go to another line.
Right.
And phones might have another group of people who specialize in taking those things apart?
Right. So we specialize by the different types of groups, but in all cases, all hard drives are removed. They're locked up until they're disassembled and shred.
Okay. Because of potential sensitive information that may be on these hard drives, people want to be assured that when they deliver those things to you that they're going to be broken down and that information is going to be destroyed.
MedTech is very conscious of two primary things. One of that is we want to be strong environmental stewards, so any type of hazardous materials are properly handled. The other one is the risk of data theft, and that is a huge portion of our business, to ensure that identities cannot be taken off of computers. We most generally ascribe to actual physical destruction of the drives. There are a few cases where customers allow us to, and they're comfortable with electronic wiping, but 99.9% of the time we are destroying, physically destroying the drive.
So what are some of the, I guess, I don't want to call them waste streams, but what are some of the categories of materials that you end up with, and then where do those go? So you have like plastics, metals. Mm-hmm.
The main categories that we get, well, first off, the stream that comes in is generally is business waste. So as computer and companies are updating their server networks and their networks, we obtain that type of material. That material actually has quite a bit of value into it, but just because of the nature of the circuit boards and the drives. The other biggest portion in volume-wise that we get is consumer waste. We pick up almost all of the landfills. All of the landfills in Salt Lake, we're picking up here in Park City. We're also picking up several other companies that are charities. Mm-hmm. And a lot of electronics are turned in there. So from a volume standpoint, most of our waste is consumer waste, but the other portion, a good portion of that is also business waste, and that's the waste that we're trying to collect and reassure the data security issue.
Okay. So if you just joined us, we're speaking with Scott Kay, account executive with MetTech Recycling. They specialize in, let's say, disassembling and deconstruction of electronic e-waste that otherwise would end up in our landfills where it should not go. There's now a process to keep make sure that hard drives and fax machines and phones and dozen copy machines and cameras, et cetera, and audio and video equipment stay out of landfills, because those are, like you say, they are raw material. At the end of their disassembly, they become raw material. You must get some exotic metals or so that are generated or separated out?
We do get some materials on that, and I think that's one of the fallacies of thinking of one of the fallacies with e-waste recycling is that there is a lot of money to be had in this industry. you are literally we consider it we're stepping over dollars to pick up dimes. Mm. So we disassemble the electronics. That is very labor intensive. We have shipping costs. For circuit boards, we may get, there's obviously gold and precious metals on those boards, but the smelting process to get that off, we're getting just a very small amount for that. So there's not a lot of money to be had in that. Where we make, where there's actually money to be made and actually can share back with the people who are and companies who are donating it is MetTech has recently brought on an asset management system where we take usable newer electronics, we will refurbish them, put in a new hard drive, and then we will resell them, and then we share back those profits. So that's another portion of the industry. You know, when you look at the triad of recycling, we want to reduce what goes to the landfill, but we also want to reuse, and that resale is a good portion of reusing. And then we also want to recycle. We want to make sure that we have pure commodity streams, plastics, CRT glass, the metals, and they go to the correct people that we audit regularly to make sure that they will recycle it the right way.
So tell us about how you audit, you know, these folks that you're talking about, as well as the certifications that your own company has.
We have all of the industry highest standards. We are an E-Stewards certified recycler, which is a recycling standard that's come out of the Basel Convention. It's more of an international standard. Not only does it handle health and safety of the employees and the communities that we're in, but it also determines how we can ship materials and the requirements for auditing our downstream partners. We're also R2, which is more of a governmental oversight. It's more guidelines. There's not a regular auditing force that comes and done that. And there's some odd. It's mainly health and safety on that one. We're also ISO 9000 and 14000, which go along with the other ones. So we're audited on that. We have registrars who come in and audit our procedures. We just recently were recertified out to 2017 on all of these. And then we also have, with part of our quality group based out of Denver, they will schedule regular audits for all of our downstream partners. So they will actually go out and visit and do the same audit that we get as well, following their procedures and making sure. So they'll track one of our lots all the way out to where it reenters the raw material stream.
Okay. So I have a bunch of items, like I say, a microwave, a phone, TVs, et cetera, I want to bring. What's the fee? Is there a drop-off fee?
Typically, there's a drop-off fee. If you are a consumer and just want to drop it off, there are you can drop it off at our facility, and we're located at 2350 Bridger Lane down in Salt Lake.
Mm-hmm.
So you can drop it off, and there's some small fees. Probably the highest cost are going to be the old CRT TVs, and they go anywhere from $5 to $20 for the great big monster TVs. Everything else is generally just up to $5 per item.
But, so this is not a big investment to recycle your electronic equipment then?
No, but that's what – but Recycle Utah pays to have – to collect e-waste. I think that's what the community
right.
needs to know, is that, you know, Recycle Utah foots the bill to recycle your e-waste. Of course, they'd be happy to take your donations to help supplement that.
But
it costs money to do these things and do the right thing.
To do the right thing, it does cost money. With Recycle Utah, they're the premier nonprofit outreach program in the state. Hmm. There's really two pockets: Park City and Moab, and coincidentally, they're focused around outdoor meccas. So the residents here are very conscious of that, and trying to get that mentality and that awareness to the rest of our customers is really my challenge. That's my I am an educator, so I educate people on this.
Yeah.
And so yes, but Recycle Utah, we do pay. You know, they do pay us in order to do that, and they rely heavily on the donations from the community and also donations when items are dropped off.
Right. But like you say, on the other end, you know, people have this image of like, oh, you get gold and silver and platinum and, you know, xenophobia and, or xenophobium or something, and you're making thousands of dollars selling that raw material. But that's – you're at the whims of the marketplace there.
Yes, because it's all commodity-based. You know, sometimes when gold prices are up, the little bit of gold we actually do get, we actually see it there. But it fluctuates so often that, you know, we can't count on that. The one thing that does stay standard and usually increases is the cost of labor to break that apart and get that in there. So I'm not ready to retire anytime soon, and I still need to work. And it's very satisfying to take a look at the amount of materials that we bring in. I'd also like to say, MetTech Recycling, we also do. We also host community events where residents can just drop off, particularly down in Salt Lake. There's 14 events that will start showing up on our website. And I know that Recycle Utah, we usually do one or two collection events up here as well.
Yeah. Great.
And can visitors stop by your center and get a tour? Or?
That's one of the things that I think we're really well known for. Not only our service, when we say we'll be there, we will be there. But you can drop by our plant at any time and go for a tour. No appointment is necessary. You can drop down there, and we love showing off what we do. It's kind of the low tech of high tech. It's a noisy environment, sure. But I think you'll see how hard we really work to make sure that we are good stewards, not only of your data and your electronics, but also to the environment.
I'm going to do that. You leave me your card. I'm going to stop down and take a visit. I got another question. Does the state capitol recycle, or do you handle the state capitol's e-waste?
We have been very, very fortunate to have won that contract for the entire state of Utah government and all participating governments.
So does that include the universities as well?
The university.
Wow.
So participating in our education, school districts, any type of city, county government, any type of municipal waste. So there is a set contract with contract pricing on that. We've been very fortunate to have that contract since 2008. And the state of Utah is very progressive.
Good.
I'm very pleased when comparing this to other states. Utah is very much on top of it.
That's encouraging.
Well, as a Utah State University employee, I have to say I'm happy to hear my electronics are going to MedTech.
There you go. It speaks to the integrity in your processes and professionalism and your standards. So obviously the next step is the NSA who will be handling their their e-waste.
You know, I've been trying to break into that building, but that might not be a good word to use. That's to break into that building, but I'm sure they have an awful lot of materials there. Federal government runs their own things. In some cases we do collect federal material, but they have their own way of doing
things. Their own thing. That doesn't surprise me, but I'm glad the state does the right thing in that sense. So Scott Kay, account executive with MedTech Recycling, website?
It's MedTechRecycling.com.
Simple enough. And like I say, I definitely want to come down there and check out the operations. It's fascinating.
We'd love to have you down there, and anyone else who shows an interest, just drop on down.
All right.
Thank you for joining us today, Scott.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Let's take a little break for some underwriters, and when we come back, we've got some news items to cover. It's This Green Earth. Stay tuned.
This is Chris Robinson with Prudential Utah Real Estate, and we've been supporting KPCW since day one. Prudential Utah helps buyers and sellers with their home needs, whether it's a condo, single-family house, or undeveloped land. Our agents know our community and our local market. More information can be found at pru-utah.com.
Hi, this is Reese DeMille with Republic Services, your local source for recycling and garbage services and a proud sponsor of KPCW's This Green Earth. Recycling in Summit County is improving. The trick to remember? Recyclable materials go in your larger blue or brown bin, and gray is for garbage. Recycling helps keep Summit County clean. SummitCountyRecycles.org.
Hi, this is Seth Adams from River Horse on Main. Whether it's dinner or appetizers in our lounge, or private chef services in your home, the River Horse has fed Park City appetites since 1987. 540 Main Street, second floor, 435-649-3536 or riverhorseparkcity.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth weekly talk show, Environmental Issues. Chris Cherniak with Nell Larson. We got a few minutes to cover some news items.
That's right. We've got three if we work fast.
Great.
So you start XL Pipeline. What's happening?
Well, while some 400 activists were being arrested in Washington, D.C. over this weekend, the TransCanada began actually pumping Canadian tar sands through the lines down to Houston. So Canadian tar sands are making their way down to refineries in Houston. And here's how they're doing it. Through rail. They're railroading, or obviously the oil tanker cars from Canada down to the collection point in Cushing, Oklahoma, where then it's piped. The southern part of the XL pipeline has already been constructed. So once they get the oil down the Cushing, it can then be put into the pipeline system and sent down to Houston. So it's being sent there via railroad, in some cases barge, and there is actually another pipeline, Keystone Pipeline, in place that people don't know about. It's a smaller line. It's a 30-inch line. The Keystone XL pipeline would be 36 inches. That's what they want
that
to build.
That is massive.
So they're pumping oil already from the tar sands. Not as much as the TransCanada would like, but it's happened already. So that doesn't mean that you still can't, that, you know, the efforts shouldn't be made to try to prohibit the XL pipeline from being constructed. But kind of there's the news. There's the reality. It's getting
there.
Okay.
It's already happening. So the second thing we wanted to talk about was some of these new tailpipe emissions rules that came out from the EPA. They focus a lot on sulfur, requiring oil refiners to strip out the sulfur, which is a smog-forming pollutant.
Right.
And it's not surprising that it's linked to a lot of respiratory illnesses. So there are estimates out about how much, you know, how much money this will save and how many people it will prevent from getting sick. So they estimate that the cleaner burning gasoline will yield between $6.7 billion and $19 billion annually in economic benefits by saving lives and preventing missed work and school days due to illness.
Mm-hmm.
And there are also numbers about, you know, preventing 2,000 premature deaths and hospital admissions and 19,000 asthma attacks. And, you know, all of these things can be roughly calculated at this point, which is pretty interesting. So they say that the new regulation will raise the cost of gasoline by about 0.75 cents per gallon and add $75 to the sticker price of cars.
And do you want to know what others who don't support this?
Yeah, the oil companies are saying nine cents. So this is, we'll see what happens. You know, it's happening, and we'll see that price at the pumps relatively soon.
Right. Well, these tier three standards go into effect, but they don't have to be totally in effect till 2017,
and some even longer. Oh, I think really? It's 2017 extension? To 2025.
So at least a few years away from being in total implementation.
Right.
You'll see these more efficient vehicles on the road and lower sulfur gasoline and diesel. So it's good news and is what should be done. And the governor supports it.
That's right. So I wanted to mention that Governor Gary Herbert was quoted in the New York Times, and he was saying that, you know, around Salt Lake City, our air is – we have, quote, gunky air that rivals L.A.
His words.
He says, we've got to find a way to eliminate that with cleaner fuels and cleaner autos. Dirty air is not a partisan issue. The fact that we have technology that's available, cleaner burning fuels and cleaner burning autos, we ought to embrace that.
Well, let's be honest.
So it's good to hear that.
Right. The majority of PM2.5 that's generated down there is from transportation.
Vehicles.
Right. Yeah. Cars, trucks, buses, et cetera. So these new standards will make a difference, but it's going to take several years before they're fully implemented and we begin to see, hopefully, the impacts of that. So.
And the auto industry supporting it because it will sort of unify the regulations across the country, not like in California you do this, in Massachusetts you do this, and
that's
Utah,
right.
Do this.
Industry does not like patchwork environmental regulations. If anything, they prefer overarching federal regulations for that uniformity and consistency. And like you said, what, $75, $95, let's say $100 more per car, you know, that's less than 1%. Of the cost of a vehicle.
Yeah.
So it's not a big deal. And there's huge benefits from that. Okay. We've got to wrap up. We'll get to the Pebble Mine story next week. Basically, the EPA has directed the Corps of Engineers not to approve a permit for Pebble Mine to go forward. And
this is a massive proposed mine in Alaska.
Copper mine, other metals, et cetera. So we'll cover that next week. We got to take one more break for underwriters, and we'll come back. We'll wrap up. It's This Green Earth. Stay tuned.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longreimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com. Brett Stimson, mortgage assistant for home purchases, 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. It is time to wrap up another week's show.
That's right. Again, we wanted to thank our guests, Tim Fair, Chris Lucas, Jeff Imus here, all talk about Shepherd of the Mountains Lutheran Church, new solar panels and systems there, and how that worked. Thanks for joining us.
That's right. And then we'd like to thank Scott Kay from MetTech Recycling for talking about how to responsibly recycle e-waste and what that process looks like. We'd also like to thank our underwriters for the show, Republic Services,
Habitat for Humanity's Restore,
Vail Resorts,
Rocky Mountain Power,
San Francisco Design,
and Prudential Utah Real Estate.
You can also join us on Facebook at KPCW This Green Earth.
Remember, this is KPCW Park City, only in Park City, only on KPCW. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.